As I mentioned earlier, joining us in studio is Jay Anderson. For those of you that are regular listeners, of course, you know Jay. First of all, he's the co-host of the morning show here, Daybreak, here on WTIP, and then, of course, is on the news team here at WTIP and covering all the stuff around the county and even beyond for WTIP as well. And Jay, given the fact that you're normally in here about 5:30 in the morning getting ready for Daybreak, thanks so much for being here at 5:30 at night.
It's a real challenge.
It's been a long day.
Yeah, but I didn't take a nap.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
good.
That's almost...
Hopefully that was at home and not back at your desk.
No, I was at home.
Okay, good. Yes, good. Yes. Well, there is never any shortage of things to talk about news-wise here in Cook County.
Doesn't seem like it.
And as I was mentioning to Buck earlier, you know, the major networks like NPR and a lot of those do all with their year in review in terms of the news and so forth. So we thought we'd have you in and talk about some of the things that have kind of come to the top of the list over the past year. And I don't know if you want to kind of do it chronologically or just by, in your mind, what kind of were the major stories that we could start talking about?
Yeah, try to avoid putting the term major on stuff, because if you're involved in it,
it's always major. Yeah. Sure.
What I thought I'd do is there's a couple, about four stories that are, news is what happens.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some things that happen more than other things. And so consequently, those things that happen a lot get a lot of attention.
Mm-hmm.
There's about four of those stories that I think we need to talk about. But interspersed between them, I kind of was looking at, at first I was thinking of going through it just chronologically, but then there are, you know, some of these smaller stories two or three times during the year, so we follow them through. So we kind of start in January and end up in December, I hope.
A good number of things that happen almost seem like they happen continually, too. I mean, they're ongoing.
Yeah, so they are. They're with us.
They need to.
In the case of the one that I want to start off with, on the community center in Poole, that's been with us before January of this year.
And it will be after it.
On it goes, yes. So I'll start with that one, and then we'll throw in a few other things that, because, you know, a station like WTIP covers local news, and there are some things that just are more important locally, and some of them are, you know, don't seem to be too important to outside listeners. But the more we get into this age, this digital age, the more we realize that anything we do in this county, or for that matter, any place, can be instantaneously known throughout the world, which is scary. And right now it's scary.
Yeah,
that
right.
We're sitting here doing this.
Yes, right.
But it can, and of course we do have a huge following. The station does for all of our programs throughout the country.
Sure.
And we've actually got a little map out here showing where we at least know where people are.
Yep.
And so they can stream us, or they don't have to just be within earshot.
Yeah.
So
yep.
And so that means that there are people out there who are interested in what's going on in Cook County, even though they may not be here.
Sure.
They've got some
reason. At least not all the time.
They've got some reason to be here. So anyway, as I mentioned, the community center pool, a few of these stories are kind of complicated, so bear with me. But at any rate, at the beginning of the year, back in January, we first reported the fact that City of Grand Marais ran into kind of a snag. And the snag was with respect to a swimming pool in the community center. Turns out that the City of Grand Marais was still under contract with Burbach Aquatics. That's an outfit over in Wisconsin. That they hired back in 2005 to look at the existing municipal swimming pool.
Mm-hmm.
And so the contract was that Burbach would do all of that work as long as the city was involved in it, unless the city suspended the project. Well, the city didn't suspend the project. So Mike Roth, who's our city administrator in Grand Marais, sent a letter to Jim Johnson, who was the board chair, saying that if the Burbach folks are not selected to design and oversee construction of a pool in the new community center, the city and its representatives will, quote, withdraw from further participation in the process, as well as participation in the community center steering committee. Well, that came as a surprise for people. And there's a whole lot of background as to why that's the case, but suffice it to say, I've got a stack about 8 inches. No, I really do. I had to print out everything they had because it was a lot of it was duplicate, but the city was good enough to do that. And since the swimming pool would be an integral part of the community center, this provision with the Burbach people and the city is interpreted as effectively excluding the city from participating in the planning of the facility, even though it's built within the city.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that interpretation was correct. So the county board, here's the hitch. The county board hired a construction management firm, Orb.
Right.
That meant that they, construction managers, pick their subcontractors.
Sure, sure.
Which they did. And the architect is a group called Meyer Group. It's out of Duluth. Meyer Group picked somebody other than Burbach to design the pool. So that meant that the city had to withdraw from mm-hmm. the planning session. In the meantime, the Community Center Steering Committee has come up with work on the Community Center. They came up with an $11 million figure, and that was within the $8 to $12 million budget that was originally set out. Well, they still want to pare that down, and they still talk about that because of maintenance operating mm-hmm. costs, that mm-hmm. sort of thing. Well, they held public meetings. They were standing room only, and then there was a petition to stop the project.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in late May, the commissioners, still wary of the project, agreed with Brady Powers, our auditor-treasurer, that because the public voted for the tax, the terms listed in the referendum must be addressed with good faith effort, so they just can't, drop it.
Sure.
So they still wanted some participation from the city of Grand Marais for two reasons. One, they want their input. It's going to be in Grand Marais. The guys that have run the swimming pool for the last number. The other reason is that they want financial participation. I'll get to that in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, the city or the county board in July decided through motion to continue work with the steering committee on the community center site selection, where it was going to be, and because they were already doing soil borings. And when that's completed, the board put the entire community center project on hold until they could work out the deal with the city. Well, the city sat down with the county, and the city and county attorney sat down with the Burbach people. It turns out that that Burbach is claiming breach of contract compensation, which could be $325,000 plus expenses.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in the meantime, as you might have recalled over the summer, a citizen group called Stop the Madness came around, and they launched a campaign to scrap the community center plans altogether. Well, now, the county wants the city to participate for two reasons, because they should as part of the planning, but also they want finances. However, Mike Roth, city administrator, points out that for this year, 2011, the city expected to spend $298,000 on the swimming pool and receive $60,000 in revenue.
Uh-huh.
So
Is that been about averaged,
that's pretty, and that's actually better than it was a couple of years ago when there was a three-part agreement, school, city, county. School dropped out.
Right.
County wasn't paying their share until a couple of years ago. When they did, then that actually brought that figure
down.
It used to be worse.
Sure, sure.
I mean, relatively worse.
Right.
So anyway, the city and the county are continuing to work on this situation. In the meantime, another citizens group, maybe the same one, led by Hal Greenwood, brought in a new pool cost information based on figures that the Burbach people had given the city several years ago, which turned out to be more than the city could afford
mm-hmm.
on renovating the pool. Anyway, what they said is that really it's only going to cost $448,000 to renovate the pool.
The existing pool.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's some dispute on that, but that's what's going on.
Where, and because I know we want to get to a couple mm-hmm. other stories too, I haven't heard a lot about this in recent weeks. Where do you see this thing going in 2012?
Where I see it going is that right now, the city, the county, and the Burbach people, through attorneys, are trying to work some kind of deal out. They've had several different possibilities, including Burbach as a consultant, this sort of thing. They kind of gave the Burbach people kind of a drop-dead date in which they needed to have something, or they would proceed through other action, which means legal stuff. Mm-hmm. But that's where we stand.
Okay.
And it remains on hold. The whole community center remains on hold. And the contract dispute as of today hasn't been settled, although they are talking. And we'll see where that goes.
Okay.
So that's a, you know, that took us almost monthly.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yep.
On a lighter side, we had some elections. We have a new mayor.
Yes.
This happened in January, or the oath of office, Larry Carlson. Bob Spry is a returning counselor after a hiatus. Mm-hmm. And Bill Lenz was elected up at the reservation. Grant Bordage held a special election. Secretary Treasurer went to April Clearwater Day McCormick. And Arvid Dahl took Committeeman 2 seat. And in March, we had our township annual meetings and elections. And so we're looking again at supervisor and treasurers where the slots open. And
now, 2012 is obviously a national election, mm-hmm. statewide elections. Is there anything local going to be in 2012?
Well, there won't be townships it could be depending upon who's up.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
These are 3-year terms for supervisors, 2-year terms for treasurers.
Yeah.
But so the treasurer won't be up, but they have, you know, however many supervisors they've got.
Right.
So anyway, that went through, and a lot of incumbents came through. We don't have to go into great detail other than the fact that they were held.
Right.
And it is January coming up.
Yes, it is.
Last January, guess who was on the side of Mount McKinley?
Of what? Oh, Lonnie.
Lonnie, right.
Guess who's there again?
Lonnie. So, here's the Lonnie update. In January, he was poised to take the summit of Mount McKinley. Well, he was miserably snowed in and the weather got bad. And but the latest word I've got from Lonnie is that he's up to 11,200 feet earlier this week. He reported temperatures of 40 below outside of his snow cave. However, it's 30 above inside.
And not as bad a wind, as I understand it.
No. No. So his plans were, if the weather allowed, that he was going to, you know, continue on this week. So we'll keep following that. 40 below? 11,000 feet? Well, speaking of outdoorsy kinds of things, and one of the stories that we covered this year, from the beginning of the year, was moose and wolves.
Right.
And as you probably know, we did a couple of First Thursdays on each of these topics, mm-hmm. and had lots of experts talking about it. But anyway, the DNR back in February said, you might have to cut the number of moose permits in half because the moose population is declining, and it's declining rather rapidly. 4,900 animals, that's a decline from last year, which was 5,500, and down from 7,800 the year before.
Mm-hmm.
So the DNR did, in fact, then cut that season in half. They also came out with a moose management plan. Now, this is something that had been in the works for a couple of years with advisory committees and that sort of thing. But at any rate, they came up with some proposals, a lot of which have to do with trying to figure out why the population is going down. They need research into what's killing moose faster than they can reproduce. The cows have young, but the young don't survive.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of other things, too. Parasites, big problem. Parasites and deer are a hookup because deer leavings have basically a brain worm,
mm-hmm.
that doesn't affect the deer, but it does affect the moose. So they're looking into a lot of those things, and there's a lot of this that they don't understand. But they do understand that there is a situation between deer and moose. And so if pushed, they're actually proposing that that people don't feed deer.
Mm.
And you know, mm-hmm. what that's like. People mm-hmm. love to feed deer because yep. they like to watch them.
You know, we had, he's been on our show before, and I believe he may have been on one of the first Thursdays,
mm-hmm.
Dr. Rolf Peterson,
yep.
who is, you know, if there's anybody that knows at least moose, about moose and wolves on Isle Royal,
right.
he's the guy.
Yeah.
And he was making the statement, too, that what's happened, because, And I never realized this. Moose don't move very much. They don't move until they have to move. Mm-hmm. You know, they generally stay within like a 200-yard area. But that because of the warmer weather, particularly in the summertime, and moose, of course, do not do well in warm weather.
No.
That that's one of the things that really
keeps
him from moving, and therefore...
Yeah, he was on our wolf program mentioned that, too. It's, yeah, there's, as the weather warms, this is tough. This is not only tough on the moose, but it also moves the deer further into the moose territory.
Right.
So that's
right.
A big problem.
Yeah.
The moose management plan is, has some parts to it that might be controversial, but it's pretty straightforward. And takes a lot of research. A lot of research takes time.
Sure, sure. So, and in the meantime, they're still dying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But also in the meantime, at least back in April, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service said they were going to delist the gray wolf in the Great Lakes of Minnesota, Wisconsin,
right.
and Michigan. And because there's supposed to be about 3,000 wolves in that territory, which is nearly double the threshold required by the Endangered Species Act. Now, let me point out that wolves were listed as threatened on the endangered species list, which is a little bit different. Anyway, so what happened was, in fact, the Fish and Wildlife Service did sign off on that, and mm-hmm. on the 27th of January, this coming month, gray wolf will leave the endangered species list. But, and this we just did a story on this week, there's been a change in the law. See, that what happens is that if you take them off the federal endangered species list, then it's up to the tribal units and the state to manage the... They've got a wolf management plan. And it was okayed by the legislature, the legislature said, get a plan mm-hmm. and have some of these items in it. So the DNR has been working on a plan. Well, last legislative session, the legislature pulled piece out of that plan. Originally, the DNR was supposed to begin developing a wolf hunting season 5 years after the animal was delisted. That was taken out of the legislation, so now the DNR is supposed to develop a wolf hunting season as soon as it's delisted.
Oh.
So that'll be in January, mm-hmm. and it'll probably have to go through the legislature. But when we talked to a wolf expert from DNR over in Grand Rapids, could happen as soon as this coming year.
Huh.
Don't know.
Yeah.
Stay tuned.
Okay.
Did you read in the Minneapolis paper how Idaho and Montana are approaching that same topic?
I did earlier when we were on the program, but I haven't kept up to date on it.
It's Idaho, I believe, that has 750 wolves approximately. They want to eliminate all but 150.
Oh, really?
And they're talking about even using drones because they're not having much luck hunting them.
No, they're really hard to hunt. They're one of the things I learned.
And Montana has 650, and they want to kill 250 of those.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they move much more quickly.
Yeah. In Minnesota, the wolf management plan says that the point at which further management plans would kick in is 1,600 wolves. Hmm. They figure they got 3,000. 1,600, that's the point at which if they've got hunting and all this kind of stuff, then they start to reconsider it. Because what they're considering is they don't want a population less than 1,600.
Really?
Yeah. So
compared to Montana they want to have 250.
Well,
interesting.
They have a little different mindset about it.
Well, I'll tell you what the mindset is, according to Rolf Peterson, who you just mentioned, because when he was on our wolf program. And a lot of that has to do with where the wolves and the domesticated farm animals intersect.
Mm-hmm.
And in places like Idaho and Montana, where they get a lot of rangeland, that's probably the case.
Yeah.
It's less the case in Minnesota. According to Dr. Peterson, Wisconsin has the biggest problem. There's about 750 wolves each in Wisconsin and the UP of Michigan. And there's not much agriculture in the UP because the UP economy has tanked in the last few years. But in Wisconsin, that might become an issue because there are more, the density of wolves and farms closer. So yeah, there's a, as you say, there's a whole different mindset. Now back to the more complicated ones, as if that's not complicated enough. This isn't complicated, but it's kind of a nice story. Library.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, February. Library took its first step by getting authorization to get 1% money from the to do studies for the library. And then soon afterwards, the deal was sealed, and they had expansion plans. I mean, they really moved fast on this.
Well, they sure did.
The library board really moved fast. And so, but as soon as they had the you know, those plans in place, and the rumors started to fly, the library's going to close for 5 months. Being intrepid news people as we are, we called up the librarian and brought her in here to disown that and say, no, no, we're not going to close. We're going to be open. But they didn't have a site yet, so they were looking around for an alternative site. Well, it turns out at the same time, the school board, whom we'll get to in a minute, decided to consolidate its offices, the administrative offices, and that whole area where the superintendent's office and the Mayanowski conference room on that end of the building, then they were they wanted to rent it out to somebody. The school district's got real financial problems. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about that. So what do you know? The library comes along looking for a space. They about half the space that they had at the original site. But they did move in there, and they did get going.
And it worked.
And it worked. And the good news is that that was in June, and they construction started in June, and now the library moved in just after Thanksgiving.
And it's beautiful.
The reviews are rave.
It really, if you haven't been there, it's really nice.
Yep.
Very
and
nice.
I mean, that's they move really fast.
Yeah. That project really went overall pretty smoothly. Yeah,
and I have heard a lot of, I mean, of course, the library people are happy as clams.
Yeah.
But I think so is the public. So.
Well, I know that, and we're running out of time a little bit, but can we do the school as quickly as we can next?
Well, there's a lot of complicated stuff with that. I'll just try to make it as simple as possible. The school district needs to downsize, and because it's not getting the revenue in through the state because they have this whole set-aside thing. It's a 60-40 where they give you 60% of what you need, and then after school it's over with. They give you the other 40% when you don't need it as much.
Yeah.
That plus, of course, declining enrollment.
Right.
And in addition to that, then the school board basically said, look, before we start cutting curricula, teachers, that athletics, that kind of stuff, we need to take a look at the administrative staff, see if there's some kind of combination. And so they looked at it. They actually talked about it for a long, long time. They came up with all kinds of different proposals. They pretty much had decided to reduce either combine the superintendent and principal's position or to reduce the superintendent's position to part-time. That seems to have kind of gone away because there's some money now that they've got they didn't realize they had. But at any rate, they've offered a contract to the superintendent for a year with a little time reduction. She's come back and said, give me 2 years and I'll take the time reduction. Mm-hmm. And that's where we are with that.
Mm-hmm.
But the district does need to address some pretty severe possible deficits.
You know, it seems to me, and as Buck and I kind of laugh about it sometimes when it's during football season and they're talking about going to this area or that area, and we don't even know where they're talking about because it's East Range or down Central or wherever it is. But obviously, a lot of school districts have combined. It's much tougher to do for Grand or Cook County. I mean,
if you could combine with Thunder Bay, it would work.
Thunder Bay might work, but I mean, even Silver Bay, that's, you know, that's over an hour away. So it really puts a strain, it seems to me, on remote districts, and I don't know that there's any more remote than Cook County.
I don't think so. Yeah, it is. And the problem with it is that you can do all kinds of seemingly draconian moves in terms of budget, but you don't really know 5 years from now what the student population is going to be. I mean, a class might come in that's big, and then the next year it's not. The other thing is school funding is really weird.
Really weird.
Because you've got, little kids are worth half a kid, and big kids are worth a kid and a half in terms of money. I mean, it's... Plus, of course, these set-asides mean that the school district has to then use its line of credit.
Right.
They have to pay interest on that. And we're talking $200,000 here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really not necessarily a good use of the public's money. They did get a referendum passed for operating, and that's the operating referendum. That's the reason why they're going through these moves to see where they can reduce in areas other than teachers and curricula, because they promised the voters they would do that if the voters gave them a referendum, which they did.
Right. Well, Jay, I know you've got a lot bigger stack that we haven't even gone through. Maybe we can try and pick this up in January or something, because we're kind of running out of time.
Could.
But I know for myself and for other listeners as well, I want to thank you for the great job you do, not only covering the news, but especially on first and third Thursdays. Those have become really important programming, I think, for this station, and I know I look forward to
we can come back and talk about things like gypsy moths and cell phone towers. We haven't even touched those yet, let alone the Poplar River.
Yeah, golf courses and ski hills.
Obviously, there's just a lot going on. And just because Cook County is, 5,200 people strong or whatever, lots goes on here.
A lot goes on.
And as I say, we haven't talked about a lot of things, and some things we've ended the year on a sad note, and I just hope that, from our point of view, it's a really tough thing to cover tragedy in a small community, because no matter what you do or what you say or whoever you talk to, it affects somebody.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's so easy to stand aside and from the outside, but it's really tough. And my wish for the new year is that we heal.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I think everybody feels the same way. But as I say, on behalf of all of our listeners, because I am one, thanks so much for the job you do.
It's a pleasure.
Keep it up.
Besides that, it's fun.
Thank you, Jay.
Thanks, Jay
Anderson from the news department here at WTIP.